From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Bill Clinton is trading away the best chance in a generation to reduce nuclear arsenals to pursue missile defense primarily for political reasons to try to save Al Gore in the year 2000 elections.
Today, a look at the U.S.-Russia summit and what Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and TRW have to do with it. And we speak with a Colombian journalist who has just fled the country under death threat. Ignacio Gomez will join us in the studio. And we'll talk about the Senate plans to deal with the $1.6 billion Colombia aid package. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. This news from Windsor, Ontario. The Conference of the Organization of American States got underway yesterday as hundreds of demonstrators chanted, "Shame, shame, shame." 41 people were arrested, mostly for confronting a bus containing OAS delegates. There have also been protests across the river in Detroit. The protests are part of the same anti-trade movement that obstructed December's World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle. Some OAS delegates say their group is being wrongly targeted, noting there are no clear trade issues on the three-day assembly's agenda. But protesters say the OAS is helping to make poverty worse through free trade agreements and other deals. Despite disagreeing with George W. Bush on abortion, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge said yesterday it would be, quote, my responsibility to back him up if asked to be Bush's running mate. Bush, the likely GOP nominee for president, favors abortion in cases of rape, incest, or to save a woman's life only. Ridge, also a Republican, backs abortion rights but opposes a certain type of late-term abortion. Ridge, who Bush has said is under consideration for the number two job, has urged the party to remove strict anti-abortion language from its platform. Bush has said he does not want to amend the language, but realizes Republicans will disagree on the issue. The Pennsylvania governor also has twice signed the death warrant for death row prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. And Vice President Al Gore has promised to fix a rental house he owns after the tenant publicly accused him of being a slumlord. Tracy Mabry and her family pay $400 a month to rent the four-bedroom home within sight of Gore's home in Carthage, Tennessee. Mabry says she repeatedly complained to Gore's property managers about overflowing toilets and backed-up sinks. She says she was told her family was being evicted, so she contacted a Nashville TV station, which aired a story on her situation Friday. Gore was on the phone to Mabry this afternoon, promising to fix the problems and pay for a new place for the family to stay while repairs are made. A spokesperson says Gore was not aware of the house's condition until his staff was contacted by the TV station. He emphasizes the family will not be evicted. An Arab American group is criticizing a government commission's recommendations for cracking down on terrorism. The president of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee says some of the recommendations would do harm to civil liberties without increasing security. The National Commission on Terrorism's report goes to Congress today. Among other things, it calls for keeping closer tabs on foreign students in the United States, as well as loosening restrictions on the FBI and CIA in opening investigations of terrorist suspects. It also calls for restricting visas for Greek citizens. It wants Greece, a NATO ally, labeled as a nation that does not fully cooperate against terrorism. The report says Pakistan should also be added to the list. The commission was created by Congress 2 years ago after the bombings of two U.S. embassies in Africa. The Vatican and some Islamic countries are accused of trying to rewrite an ambitious UN plan for women's equality adopted 5 years ago in Beijing. The charges from human rights groups and women's organizations come as a special session of the UN General Assembly opens today in New York. It's designed to push forward the agenda approved in China. That agenda called on governments to work towards women's equality in everything from education to employment. And it stated that women have the right to decide freely everything related to their sexuality and childbearing. Amnesty International says the Vatican is aligned with Algeria, Libya, Iran, and Pakistan in opposing the platform, just as they did in 1995. Hillary Rodham Clinton is addressing the conference this afternoon. Her subject is small loans to help women escape poverty. It's one of the issues she touted at the Beijing meeting 5 years ago. Nearly 3 years have passed since one of the darkest moments in New York Police Department history, the torture of Abner Louima in a precinct bathroom. Three officers have been convicted and two others have pleaded guilty. But the fallout continues in federal court this week when Francisco Rosario stands trial for allegedly trying to cover up the August 9, 1997 attack on the Haitian immigrant. Rosario was not directly involved, but prosecutors say the plainclothes officer lied to investigators about what he saw at the station house the night the handcuffed Louima was sodomized with a broken broomstick by police. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. President Clinton told Russian legislators today that partnership, despite differences, is the right course for both their nations. America and Russia are not destined to be adversaries again, he said, but it is not guaranteed that we will be allies. He recounted major differences, U.S. missile defense plans, and Russia's conflict in Chechnya among them in the 45-minute address to the parliament. Clinton is the first American president to address the Duma, assembled in its office building-style Capitol building with members of the upper chamber, the Federation Council. He spoke to a house of more than 400. As Clinton finished, ultranationalist Vladimir Zhirinovsky shouted at other Duma members for applauding him. Zhirinovsky said afterward, "I told him in English, lift the blockade on Iraq, withdraw troops from Yugoslavia, and do not intervene in Russian affairs." Communist Party leader Gennady Zhuganov said he thought Clinton would be more honest about the situation in Russia. He said, "We are for dialogue. We understand that there can be no war in the modern world." From Moscow, Clinton traveled to Kiev, Ukraine, where President Leonid Kuchma was expected to announce that the Chernobyl power plant, scene of the world's worst nuclear accident in 1986, will be shut down this year. The United States is helping finance that shutdown. Well, today we're going to talk about what was and was not accomplished at the U.S.-Russian summit between Vladimir Putin and President Clinton. And we're joined by Bill Hartung. He's a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute at the New School for Social Research, now I believe called New School University in New York City.
Unfortunately, yes. That wasn't my idea.
Welcome to Democracy Now! Well, tell us what is on the table and what happened this weekend.
Well, it was sort of deja vu all over again. You know, an American president going to meet with the Russian leader to talk about plans for reducing nuclear weapons and negotiating over a missile defense system. It sounded very much like what happened with Reagan and Gorbachev in Reykjavik. And similarly, this sort of holy grail of missile defense is once again standing in the way of getting rid of nuclear weapons. When Putin came in, he quickly ratified the START II treaty, the comprehensive test ban, which we couldn't even get the U.S. Senate to do. Then he said, you know, let's immediately get down to 1,500 or 1,000 warheads, which would be low enough levels that other countries would be interested in then negotiating limits on their own nuclear arsenals. And Clinton said, well, you know, contingent on this national missile defense. Now, national missile defense is not affordable. It's not feasible technically. It's dangerous. And it raises the question of, you know, why is Clinton doing this? And it ends up most of it is Clintonian Dick Morris triangulation. You know, they want to steal an issue from the Republicans. The Republicans have united behind missile defense as if it's the legacy of Ronald Reagan. They seem to forget that Reagan actually himself abandoned Star Wars in favor of nuclear reductions at the end of his term. And so we have this absurd situation where basically Clinton says, we're going to forfeit the possibility of deep reductions in nuclear arsenals of the only country that can really hurt us now, Russia, in exchange for letting the Pentagon basically have a slush fund to try to develop a missile defense system, which may or may not ever work. So it's one of the most absurd junctures in U.S.-Russian relations, in the whole history of our relations with Russia and the Soviet Union. And it's because of Bill Clinton's cowardice and because of the, discipline and fervor of the conservative right that we've ended up in this position.
What does the presidential race have to do with this here in the United States?
Well, Clinton, for, almost since he first came in, when he tried to push through the gays in the military policy, he quickly decided that the best way to neutralize the Republicans on defense issues was to throw money at the Pentagon. And so he has essentially, his military budget over his term is indistinguishable from what George Bush would have spent. The difference is he's got a Republican Congress that adds $5 or $10 billion every year to what his Pentagon requests. But in the case of missile defense, what he had done is he had this sort of cutesy strategy of he was spending $4 billion a year. He was saying, we'll see if the technology's ready, and then in 1999 we'll make a decision about whether to deploy it. And when he did that back in 1996, under the influence of Bill Cohen, his wonderful Republican defense secretary, the idea was, well, let's kick it past the 96 elections. Let's, throw it down the road to where it's not going to be a controversial issue. In the meantime, the Republicans mobilized. They rigged up the Rumsfeld Report, which gave an exaggerated sense of the North Korean missile threat. The North Koreans tested a missile. Now Clinton feels compelled to make a decision this summer about whether to go ahead with this system. And so basically the Republicans have been able to control the agenda on this, and the strategy of meeting them halfway isn't working on this issue. Time he goes halfway out on the limb, the Republicans go further out on the limb, and he and Gore feel compelled to follow them.
We're talking to Bill Hartung, who's a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute at the New School in New York City, as President Clinton wraps up his summit with Vladimir Putin. What has been Putin's response to the National Missile Defense System?
Initially, he said he wasn't going to budge at all. He said, if you violate the ABM Treaty, all treaties having to do with arms between the U.S. and Russia will be off. Conventional forces, nuclear forces, you name it. More recently, he has said, well, perhaps we can collaborate on a system to deal with the missile threat from states like North Korea and Iran. The Clinton people have agreed to discuss this further with him, but basically, at this point, neither side has budged. Clinton wants his limited missile defense. He wants Russia to modify the ABM Treaty. The Russians clearly do not want to do that. So on this issue so far, there's no movement. So they made a few subsidiary agreements just to sort of show that, there was goodwill. But on the missile defense issue itself, there's no progress.
What are the corporations in the United States that have to gain from the National Missile Defense?
Well, I call them the lumbering behemoths of the apocalypse, because they're these big, unwieldy companies which, despite the fact that the government's been throwing billions of dollars at them, have managed to see their stock prices halved in the last 2 years. Profit margins are lower because of their own mistakes, blowing up an intelligence satellite on the launch pad, fraud on TRW's work on the missile defense system itself, flaws in the Patriot missile that Raytheon makes. So basically you've got Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, and TRW. And those four companies have gotten 60% of the more than $2 billion that the Pentagon has shoveled out for missile defense research in the last few years. These companies are now in charge of testing and telling the government whether this thing is going to work. So the companies that will stand to make tens of billions of dollars from building this are the ones that are doing the tests. That's sort of the definition of a conflict of interest. And Boeing, which is supposed to be supervising the entire process, was involved with TRW on an actual system that, where there's allegations of fraud. There's an Israeli-born engineer named Nira Schwartz who worked on a TRW system that was supposed to be able to tell the difference between a decoy and a nuclear warhead. She said they forced her to fudge those results, and she's filing a civil suit against the company. So you've got these companies that have a history of corruption, that desperately need the money, that are basically being given the job of telling us whether we need this and whether it's going to work.
Bill Hartung, in a piece you just wrote in The Nation, Star Wars 2, here we go again. You talk about the three C's of contemporary U.S. politics: conservative ideology, Clintonian cowardice, and corporate influence. These short-term pressures, in turn reinforced by an ambitious long-range military objective, the misguided quest for a state of absolute military superiority. You also talk about Colin Powell being the one to come up with the whole rogue state idea.
Yeah, basically there's two tracks to this. One is this misguided sort of ideology and pork barrel politics. You've got people like Frank Gaffney, who was so right-wing he got kicked out of the Reagan Pentagon, who's been beating the drums for this for 10 years, funded by Richard Mellon Scaife, by the Coors family, by Lockheed Martin and Boeing. And he, when he linked up with Newt Gingrich and the Gingrich Republicans, they were able to take hold of this debate. But then you've also got President Clinton and his continuing compromise. You've got these companies desperate for this. And then you've got this sort of strain of cowboy militarism. The U.S. Space Command has these ambitious documents that basically say they want to dominate space the way Britain dominated the seas in the 19th century. And then there's short-term objectives. William Cohen basically says, if we have to go in and, you know, take out North Korea, we don't want them to have any missiles that could hurt our troops. So it's not really about a defensive system. It's about extending U.S. military dominance, allowing the U.S. to intervene with relative impunity as they did in Iraq and Kosovo.
Where is the peace movement today in the United States?
Well, it's gearing up, you know, on the level of the debate. I think we've actually done pretty well. You know, we've revved up groups like Peace Action are doing ads against senators who tried to kill the comprehensive test ban. There's a group called the Fourth Freedom Forum that's been doing a lot of good grassroots work. Groups like Union of Concerned Scientists have basically shown that this thing makes no sense as a technical matter. So I think we've got, sort of like in the early periods of the anti-Vietnam War movement, if they're willing to debate us face-to-face, they might as well send an empty chair because their arguments make no sense. But what we don't have yet is purchase on the political system. Both parties are talking about deploying one form of missile defense. Ralph Nader has said that he will start speaking against this, and I think if he does, that'll offer an interesting option because he's already in a position to hurt Gore in some key states. But until we find people like Dennis Kucinich and allies of his in the system who can take this grassroots pressure that's just starting and change it into policy, we're still at a disadvantage. We could win the debate, we could win the media, wars on this, and we could still lose the battle. But I think the thing we have going for us is that the choice is so stark now. Do we want to reduce thousands of nuclear weapons, or do we want to blow billions of dollars on a dangerous, unworkable defense system that was supposed to be discarded in the days of Ronald Reagan, just like we discarded the notion that ketchup is a vegetable? Let's be done with this already. So I think a lot of people are scratching their heads about why Clinton or anybody would want to do this, and we do have an opportunity over these next 3 to 6 months and also at the conventions in the summer to frame the debate on our terms, that the only way to be safe from these weapons is not by building high-tech gadgets, it's by abolishing nuclear weapons, getting rid of the damn things once and for all.
Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, TRWG, how much they've contributed to the presidential campaigns, to the parties?
They've given several million in soft money just in this recent cycle. And in fact, just one donor, Bernard Schwartz, who has longstanding ties to Lockheed Martin. He also runs L'Oreal Space, which is doing some of the radar work for missile defense. He has given $1.1 million personally to Democratic Party committees in this last election. He was the one that got in trouble for pushing the State Department to change the terms on satellite exports to China in a deal that some people think helped them improve the capabilities of their nuclear missiles. So they've got also a guy named Bruce Jackson, who ran the committee to expand NATO. He's a chief fundraiser for the Republicans, and he is also on Lockheed Martin's board and the board of Frank Gaffney's group, which is the sort of nerve center of this whole movement. He said at a meeting that I was at to a bunch of his cronies that, you know, if Bush gets in, don't worry about it, because I personally am going to be writing the Republican platform on this stuff. So they're deep into the political system, both with money, with influence peddling, with the revolving door. And that's why we have to scream bloody murder if we're going to stop these folks.
Do you see any difference between the Gore and Bush platforms on nuclear weapons?
Yeah. Gore's is dangerous and misguided, and Bush's is totally insane, you know, because basically, you know, Gore holds open this possibility of negotiating a limited defense with Russia. The problem with that is that limited defense would also negate China's very small nuclear force of only 18 to 20 missiles. So it would still spur an arms race in Asia. It would still spur other countries to want to get their own nukes. So it's hardly a, you know, if the Russians came through, that's not the end of the story. Bush just wants to raise the flag of Reaganism. He's like, you know, put weapons at sea, put them in space, put them in your bathroom. I mean, you know, this guy is like ridiculous. And it just indicates that, you know, maybe he was better off when he was either keeping his mouth shut or forgetting the names of countries, because when he does, you know, speak in complete sentences, the content of those sentences are completely idiotic.
Bill Hartung, I want to thank you for being with us, Senior Fellow at the World Policy Institute at New School University. If people want to get your latest studies, where can they go on the web or where can they call?
They should go to our site, www.worldpolicy.org. You click on projects and then arms trade, you can get our new report, or you can call us at 212-229-5808, extension 112.
That's 212-229-5808. And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! When we come back, we're going to take a look at a major bill that the Senate is taking on this week, $1.6 billion to Colombia. We'll speak with a Colombian journalist who has just fled the country because of death threats, as well as an Afro-Colombian senator who has just moved to this country and heading up to Canada as well because of the situation there. Stay with us. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. Policymakers in Washington are preparing to substantially increase their backing of Latin America's premier human rights violator, Colombia, under the guise of the war on drugs. The Clinton administration initiated $1.6 billion aid package was approved by the House of Representatives in late March. It now is being considered by the Senate. If the bill eventually passes, it will furnish the Colombian security forces with a massive amount of aid in the form of equipment and training, including about $388 million to purchase 28 Black Hawk helicopters for the Colombian Army. But for months, the funding package has been held up by Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott. We are going to have a debate on the issue of the Colombian aid package. We'll be joined by Amnesty International's Carlos Salinas, as well as the spokesperson for the Drug Czar's office, Barry McCaffrey's office. Bob Wiener will be with us because Barry McCaffrey is the number one supporter of this so-called anti-drug bill. But before we do that, we're joined in the studio by two prominent Colombians who have fled Colombia in the last month. Ignacio Gomez is with us. If you're a regular listener to Democracy Now!, you heard him last week on the program. Our outgoing producer, Maria Carrion, had just been in Colombia, and she interviewed him about some of his exposés involving massacres in southern Colombia. And we played an excerpt of the interview when she asked him about what it means to be a journalist in Colombia. More journalists have died in Colombia over the last years than in any other Latin American country. We are also joined in the studio by Piedad Córdoba, who is a Colombian senator, president of the Human Rights Commission of the Colombian Congress. This is the first anniversary of her kidnapping by paramilitaries in Medellin. She was taken to the hideaway of the feared paramilitary leader, Carlos Castaño, where she was held for 16 days. She has come to New York to address the UN Beijing Plus Five conference on women. And then she heads to Canada, where she will make her home as she is an exile from Colombia in fear for her life. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Ignacio Gomez, you just came to the United States, to New York, a few days ago. What happened in the last week?
One half hour
after a botched kidnapping attempt directed at me, someone called my colleague, Bedoya Lima,
y la secuestraron, la violaron,
kidnapped her, raped her,
y insistentemente le advirtieron que
and insistently warned her
a mí y a otros that tres colegas
myself nos, and three other colleagues
nos iban a cortar en pedazos.
Were going to be chopped up into little pieces.
Yo estuve escondido en Colombia.
I was hiding out in Colombia,
preparando mi viaje,
preparing my trip,
y organizando la situación de otros cuatro,
organizing the situation of another four journalists
que habían sufrido intentos de asesinato,
who had suffered murder attempts,
porque también soy presidente de la Fundación para la Libertad de Prensa,
because I'm also president of the Foundation for Press Freedom,
y volé a Nueva York, expulsado del país.
So I flew to New York, expelled from the country.
We talked to you, we played this interview with you last week where you said you didn't want to talk about the threats you face because if you talk about death, you will start to smell it all around you. Why are you targeted? And who is targeting you?
La policía colombiana sostiene,
the Colombian police sustains that
que yo estoy enfrentando un riesgo múltiple.
I'm facing multiple risks.
Proveniente de mis trabajos periodísticos sobre corrupción.
As a result of my journalistic works on corruption,
durante los últimos cinco años,
over the last 5 years,
la presidencia ha perdido por lo menos seis ministros.
The presidency has lost at least six ministers.
Con motivo de mis trabajos como periodista.
As a result of my work as a journalist.
Yo he trabajado artículos sobre derechos humanos.
I've written articles on human rights.
Muy frecuentemente y
very frequently.
Recientemente he estado trabajando sobre la masacre.
Recently I've been working on the massacre
Mapiripán, que
at Mapiripán,
motivó las protestas,
which brought about protests,
enfurecimiento del comandante de las fuerzas militares colombianas,
the commander of the Colombian Armed Forces.
y de los paramilitares de Carlos Castaño.
And Carlos Castaño's paramilitary forces as well.
Can you talk for a moment about the Mapiripan massacre that took place in 97? We did just do an interview last week, run an interview that Maria Carrion did with a lawyer for the survivors. But can you talk about the U.S. military's connection to it, the story that you broke?
Es absolutamente claro.
It's absolutely clear.
Que el aeropuerto en el que viajó, al que llegó un grupo de paramilitares.
That's the airport at which a group of paramilitaries landed.
Armado solo con machetes, 15 hombres.
Only with machetes, 15 men.
Que estaban protegidos por otros 100 paramilitares.
Who were protected by another 100 armed paramilitaries with shotguns.
Era un aeropuerto que quedaba en la base.
Was an airport located within
aérea principal,
the main air force base
del Departamento de Estado en San José del Guaviare.
Of the Department of State in San José del Guaviare.
También es claro que en el lugar donde estaba entrenando,
it's also clear that at the place,
el coronel que hoy está
the colonel
sindicado
today is
por ser el autor intelectual,
named as the intellectual author of the massacre,
los boinas verdes, el grupo tercero,
the Green Berets, the third group,
basado en Fort Bragg,
based in Fort Bragg,
entrenando su grupo,
were training their group
exactamente en military planning.
Exactly in military planning.
Es casual que en ese mismo momento,
it just so happens that at that same moment,
el coronel estaba planeando la masacre como quedó claramente,
the colonel was planning the massacre,
como quedó claramente mostrado en los papeles,
as was clearly demonstrated in the investigation on the matter.
If the 1.6 or 1.7 billion dollar aid package goes through, if the Senate approves it here in this country, what does that mean for the people of Colombia?
Si no se aprueba con las salvedades,
if it's not approved
de derechos humanos
with
que
the
tener,
exceptions to human rights that it should contain,
estamos viendo que en primer lugar,
what we're looking at in the first place is that there
no vamos a tener periodistas en Colombia.
We're not going to have journalists in Colombia who can tell the story of the atrocities that are going to be committed with that money.
Y es un hecho,
and it's a fact
que el diagnóstico que los Estados Unidos
that the
ha hecho
diagnosis that the United States has carried out
sobre la situación de violencia en Colombia,
about the situation of violence in Colombia,
no es consecuente con la solución que se plantea,
is not consequent to the solution that is being set forth in the Colombia plan.
Según los documentos del Departamento
according
de Defensa,
to documents issued by the Department of Defense,
y aún del Departamento de Estado,
and even the Department of State,
los paramilitares y la guerrilla,
the paramilitary forces and guerrilla forces
están involucrados
are involved
in
narco-trafficking.
Y en Colombia todos sabemos que eso es así.
And all of us in Colombia know that that is the case.
Pero si Estados Unidos solamente
but
combate,
if the United States only combats the guerrilla drugs,
está otorgándole automáticamente,
it's automatically
el monopolio de la cocaína,
granting a monopoly over cocaine
a un grupo fascista,
to a fascist group.
Está apoyando a los fascistas
it's
en Colombia,
supporting fascists in Colombia. The United States is doing that if it maintains this position.
Ignacio Gomez is with us, has just fled to the United States from Colombia, where he was targeted by Carlos Castaño's paramilitary forces. He is here in New York, and, well, because he was here, was attending the Investigative Reporters and Editors Conference this weekend. Also with us, Piedad Córdoba, a Colombian senator who did not want to be here in New York, headed to Canada, where she will make her home, but rather to stay in Colombia, but a year ago was kidnapped by paramilitaries in Medellin, taken to the hideaway of Carlos Castaña, the feared paramilitary leader. What happened to you when you were held for 16 days, Senator Piedad Córdova?
Está preguntando qué le pasó en los 16 días en que estaba secuestrada.
Fueron 16 días muy difíciles, muy duros.
There were 16 very difficult days.
Donde sentí permanentemente la amenaza de ser asesinada por mis actividades en favor de los derechos humanos en Colombia.
Where I was constantly under fear and threat of being assassinated for my activities for human rights in Colombia.
Estuve amarrada, vendada.
I was tied up, blindfolded.
Y extrañamente fui sacada de mi departamento en un helicóptero que al parecer nadie pudo ver.
And strangely enough, they were able to take me out of my apartment in a helicopter that nobody seemed to see.
Y se me acusaba de ser miembro de uno de los grupos guerrilleros en el país, del ELN.
They accused me of being a member of one of the guerrilla groups in the country, the ELN.
No creo que me hubieran podido matar a raíz de la presión internacional que fue muy fuerte.
I think they weren't able to kill me because of the very strong international pressure.
Pero pienso que el objetivo era exactamente ese, como lograr un escarmiento frente a quienes en Colombia trabajan con mucha dificultad en favor de los derechos humanos.
But I believe the message was to put fear into the hearts of the people who are working very hard on human rights in Colombia.
What area of Colombia did you represent?
¿De cuál área de cuál parte del país representas?
Yo soy de un departamento que desafortunadamente es como la cuna de los paramilitares, que es Antioquia.
I'm from the department of Antioquia, which is really the cradle of the paramilitaries.
Pero mi familia paterna es del departamento del Chocó.
But my family is from, on my father's side, is from the department of Chocó.
Mm-hmm. Who is Carlos Castaño?
¿Quién es Carlos Castaño?
Pues es un hombre que definitivamente es el brazo armado de la derecha de mi país.
He is a man who unfortunately is the armed representative of the right wing in my country.
Es un hombre de unos 35 o 36 años de edad.
He's about 35, 36 years old.
Con mucho apoyo y sobre todo con mucho apoyo económico.
He has a lot of support, especially a lot of economic support.
Y yo diría que es el responsable en los últimos años de los peores asesinatos y masacres en Colombia.
And I would say that in the last few years he is responsible for the worst assassinations in Colombia.
And what is his connection to the Colombian military?
¿Y cuál es su conexión con el ejército colombiano?
Yo pienso que si no existiera una conexión muy clara con el ejército del país, con algunos miembros del ejército, sería imposible el aumento y las actividades de esos grupos paramilitares.
I believe that if there wasn't a strong connection with the Colombian military, with particularly certain people in the Colombian military, it would be impossible to be doing what he's doing.
Desafortunadamente, muchas de estas masacres ocurren con la presencia de los militares.
Unfortunately, many massacres occur with military presence.
Y con la omisión de sus funciones.
And with the omission of those functions.
Y sobre todo con el beneplácito de muchos sectores, yo diría, económicamente importantes del país.
And with the blessing of many important economic forces in the country.
Este fin de semana pasado concluyó un paro armado.
This weekend, a ceasefire stopped.
De paramilitares.
In part of the militaries.
Y fueron muy bien protegidos por el ejército.
They were very well protected by the army.
Por primera vez yo vi a los campesinos bien tratados.
For the first time I saw the campesinos well treated.
Lo que da a entender que realmente hay nexos muy fuertes entre militares y paramilitares.
It's important to understand that there's a very strong link between the paramilitaries and the armed forces.
Piedad Córdova is our guest. What about the connection between the paramilitaries and the U.S. military? Is there one?
Existe una conexión entre los paramilitares y los militares estadounidenses.
Pues yo no lo sabría decir exactamente, pero lo que sí tengo muy claro es que pues el ejército de aquí apoya el ejército de allá y no creo que no sepan qué tipo de actividades realizan ellos.
I don't know for sure, but I know that the U.S. military supports the Colombian military and perhaps they don't know about all their activities.
Let me put that question to Ignacio Gómez about the U.S. military's connection to the paramilitaries.
Carlos Castaño es un narcotraficante.
Carlos Castaño is a confessed narcotrafficker.
Desde 1984.
Dating back to 1984.
Estados Unidos, que suele abrir investigaciones contra todos los narcotraficantes.
United States, which tends to open up investigations against all narcotraffickers.
Lleva más de 17 años omitiendo esa función frente a Carlos Castaño.
Has been omitting its functions in regarding Carlos Castaño for 17 years.
Carlos Castaño participó de un grupo.
Carlos Castaño participated in
de asesinos,
a group of murderers
que eliminó cruelmente,
that cruelly
toda
eliminated
la organización de narcotraficantes de Pablo Escobar,
the entire narcotrafficking organization of Pablo Escobar.
Y la muerte de Carlos Castaño fue reivindicada por el Pentágono el mismo día que ocurrió en Colombia. La muerte de Pablo Escobar, perdón.
And Pablo Escobar's death was vindicated at the Pentagon the very same day that it took place.
El ejército norteamericano entrena permanentemente
the U.S. Army
al ejército
is
colombiano.
Continuously training the Colombian Army.
Y ha desarrollado planes estratégicos,
and it has developed strategic plans
que han coincidido desde 1984
coincided since 1984
hasta el presente
to the present
con los planes y los movimientos
with the plans and movements
de Carlos Castaño.
Of Carlos Castaño.
En este momento, Carlos Castaño,
at this moment, Carlos Castaño
está emplazando sus tropas,
is moving his troops
en el borde del área de operaciones de los Estados Unidos,
the border of the operations area where the United States troops are.
Y para ello expulsó a seis periodistas de
that,
la zona.
And he expelled six journalists from the region.
Quemándoles su carro y amenazándolos gravemente.
Burning their
muerte.
Cars and threatening them, threatening their lives.
We have to break for stations to identify themselves. When we come back, we'll also be joined by Carlos Salinas of Amnesty International about the details of the bill that the Senate is expected to take up tomorrow. We also hope to be joined by a spokesperson for the Drug Czar's office, Barry McCaffrey, about why the U.S. is supporting, the U.S. Clinton administration supporting the bill. At this point, he is in meeting with McCaffrey, and we're going to see if he can get out of it. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back with journalist Ignacio Gomez and Colombian Senator Piedad Córdoba in just a minute. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. It's unusual when Congress is debating a bill to be able to hear from people on the ground about a country that the money would go to, although we shouldn't say that the $1.6 or $7 billion is going to even the majority of it will be going down to Colombia. In fact, most of it will be spent here in the United States on corporations like Sikorsky
and its helicopters, as well as Bell Helicopter Textron. That's where a lot of the money goes to the arms manufacturers in this country, and then the weapons get sent down to Colombia. But we are joined in the studio by two people who I shouldn't say would be the recipients of that aid, but who are in the country that we're talking about, from the country, now in the United States because of the terror in Colombia. Ignacio Gomez, a veteran investigative journalist. He's with the daily newspaper El Espectador, and Piedad Córdoba, the Colombian senator, president of the Human Rights Commission of the Colombian Congress, kidnapped by paramilitaries last year, has come up to this country. She's addressed the UN Conference on Women Beijing Plus Five and is headed to Canada, where she will live until the terror has diminished. On the phone with us is Carlos Salinas. He's with Amnesty International. Carlos, can you lay out the bill that we're talking about, Senate taking up this week?
Well, the Senate, what they've done is they've curtailed and cut quite a bit of what the House had passed earlier and came up with a total of $714 million in additional aid for Colombia. That is in addition to $330 million that was already pre-planned, giving a grand total of $1.044 billion in aid to Colombia. And of that, at least $336 million is in aid strictly for the Colombian military, and about $114 million is in direct aid to the Colombian National Police.
What percentage of it, or how much, goes to U.S. weapons manufacturers?
Well, we haven't done an analysis of looking at which companies will be the main beneficiaries, but there is a sort of a battle of the corporations looming, because the Senate version decided that they weren't going to give Sikorsky the grand contract that the House is giving. So the Senate version has several million dollars in aid for Huey 2 helicopters as opposed to Black Hawk, and the Black Hawks are the ones that are manufactured by Sikorsky. In the House aid, there's $362 million for the Black Hawks, while the Senate version has $64 million for the UH-1N Huey helicopters.
And what about the delay right now? There was a front page piece in the Washington Post last week talking about the problems with the delay, since it was emergency funding. A lot hasn't happened. For example, and some might consider this a good thing, fumigation flights against coca, a centerpiece of the anti-drug effort, have been scaled back or stopped in many key areas. Special Colombian Army anti-drug battalion trained at U.S. expense last year has yet to undertake its first mission. A second 1,000-man battalion recruited, vetted for human rights violations, and moved 2 months ago to a training base in southern Colombia is, quote, doing jumping jacks while waiting for U.S. Army Special Forces trainers, for whom no funding has been approved.
Well, one thing is, I'd rather have the soldiers doing jumping jacks than aiding and abetting paramilitaries and committing massacres against peasants. So I think that's a very good thing. With regards to fumigations, I think there's a lot of unanswered questions and health concerns that have been raised, not to mention environmental concerns. And it is no secret that the U.S. government has pushed much more toxic fumigation schemes on the Colombians, which have been resisted even by the likes of Dow Chemical, that did not want its products being used in Colombia the way the U.S. government wanted them used. Hmm. So there's a lot of unanswered questions that need to be met before those fumigations can really be kept up in good faith.
Well, Carlos Salinas, we have just been joined by Bob Weiner, spokesperson for the drug czar Barry McCaffrey. The general has been pushing very hard for this $1.6 billion aid bill to go through. Bob Weiner, why?
Hey, and Carlos, thank you so much for your support in working with us on human rights concerns in Colombia. Sorry we're late. I just literally got out of a meeting with Director McCaffrey as we speak. The president, once again, has pressed for the Aid to Colombia package. And the reason is that 90% of the drugs that come to the United States come from or through Colombia. 90% of the cocaine, 70% of the heroin that comes into the United States, of the seizures that are now recorded, come from or through Colombia. 10 years ago, it was 0% of the heroin. So how can you not go after the number one source country, which has the drugs that are killing our kids? Of course you do. Now, I have personally gone with Director McCaffrey and watched the training at Tolomita of human rights for their soldiers. They are becoming more and more sensitive to that. It is a real concern. We totally agree with Carlos that that must be addressed. And it was not the mentality of doing so in the past. But now, Colombia is aware that that is part of the vectoring of U.S. aid, that there will be none unless they are sensitive to human rights concerns. And I watched how the soldiers in the training kicked a FARC person that they supposedly had captured, and another soldier said, no, you cannot do that. And one soldier took a wallet and said, the other one said, no, you cannot do that. They are training physically, emotionally, and actually now in to conduct human rights properly and not to to conduct the abuses. So that is very important. Now, in terms of the eradication programs, I saw the CIA briefing here. Where you eradicate, the coca doesn't grow. Where you don't eradicate, the coca grows. It's sort of obvious. And in Peru, which went down 66% in coca cultivation in the last 4 years, Bolivia, 55% reduction in the last four years. These are doable programs, and you've got to correlate the environmental impact. Of course you do. There are tests that are constantly going on. There are tests in the United States that are going on. But given that we do not want drugs killing our kids, this is a good thing if these countries want to do that and do it accurately. So there's a lot going on here. Nobody's out to cause environmental destruction. Nobody's out to commit human rights abuses. But we are out to stop the drugs from coming into our country. And Colombia wants more and more to stop it also because they know it is destroying their democracy. And there's a lot of disingenuous press that goes on. Is this Amy who's on now?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of disingenuous press.
I'm going to interrupt for a second, Bob Wieners, to give Carlos a chance
okay.
to respond.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I certainly agree that the General McCaffrey has shown at least a public interest in human rights, but we certainly do not support the general in the plan for further escalating the 40-year-old conflict in Colombia. Unfortunately, I mean, despite the good intentions that are stated, what this really amounts to is a thinly veiled counterinsurgency package that's going to result in a humanitarian and a human rights catastrophe. And while we certainly support any kind of human rights sensitivity training, human rights sensitivity awareness, we also understand that in the Colombian situation, not only is there a long history of impunity, meaning that the climate's not positive or conducive for ensuring that soldiers, in fact, do the right thing, but also, there's no independent monitoring. The human rights movement has been decimated in Colombia. Now they're going after the journalists. It is no coincidence that Ignacio Gomez is here in the United States after having been forced to flee Colombia. And without the independent oversight, I mean, the massacres are going to happen in the middle of the forest, and no one's going to be there to tell us about them.
The journalists that we talk to want this package. One journalist, his cousin was kidnapped by the FARC. Let's keep in mind who's committing the human rights abuses. It's the people who are getting $1.8 billion a year from the drug cultivation in Colombia and who are constantly killing people and kidnapping them.
Bob Wiener, we're actually joined in the studio by Ignacio Gomez, who is the journalist head of the Independent Press Freedom Foundation in Colombia. He reports for El Espectador. He was just forced out of Colombia last week. What are your thoughts?
Yo miro muy cuidadosamente la prensa norteamericana.
I keep a careful eye on U.S. press.
Y todavía no he visto la primera noticia,
and I have still not seen
de un niño asesinado por la cocaína.
The first report of a child murdered by cocaine.
También miro permanentemente la prensa colombiana.
I keep a continuous eye on the Colombian press as well.
Y en la prensa colombiana falta espacio para registrar
and
el asesinato
is, there has
de
been
nuestro
no space
niño,
to register the murder of our children.
en relación con la guerra que vivimos en Colombia.
Related to the war that we are living through in Colombia.
Yo no estoy utilizando información secreta ni robando
documentos. I'm not using secret information or stealing documents.
Utilizando documentos
I'm using documents
de propiedad del Congreso
that are property of the U.S. Congress
para encontrar esas coincidencias
to find those coincidences
entre los entrenamientos
between the training
los boinas verdes
the training
al ejército colombiano
of the Green Berets training the Colombian Army
y los abusos a los derechos humanos que han sucedido
and
en el
human
país.
Rights abuses that have happened throughout the country.
So.
Bob Weiner.
Well, we have found that human rights abuses occur and drugs are prevalent where there is no government control. And that is one of the reasons why the FARC and the ELN are putting this disingenuous press plan into play, saying that we only want democracy. In fact, what they want is free rein and a blank check to grow drugs and to be able to send them wherever they want and make as much money as they want. That is the problem. There's a counter press strategy working from the FARC and from the ELN that's in their interest to make it look like all they are is democratic lovers. They represent, actually, the FARC and the ELN represent 4% and 8% public opinion. The Colombian people hate, detest, resent, and are afraid of them. And the only way that Colombia will be able to stop drugs and to return stability is if they have a strong way of stopping the drug trafficking and cutting it out and slicing it down.
Is the general concerned about the paramilitary violence in Colombia and the human rights groups labeling Colombia's militaries as one of the worst human rights abusing entities in Latin America?
Well, the human rights abuses have gone down and down and down and down as this increasing sensitivity, Amy, that we've mentioned has gone up. They are aware of the need to change their culture of violence that they have had in the past. They are aware of that. And yes, of course, he is very concerned about the paramilitaries and the ELN, what's called the illegal self-defense groups now. They change the title all the time, but they're whatever you want to call them. The people of Colombia need to regain control through their government, and that is what we're helping to do, and that will stop the drugs, it will stop the drug trafficking, and that's the overall objective.
Bob Weiner, we're also joined by State Senator Piedad Córdoba, who was arrested, who was kidnapped by the paramilitaries a year ago for 16 days. Bob Weiner of General McCaffrey's office, Piedad Córdoba, says that the people of Colombia want this aid package.
Bob Weiner está diciendo que el pueblo colombiano quiere tener el plan.
Me da la sensación de que él no conoce al pueblo colombiano.
I get the impression that Mr. Weiner does not know the Colombian people.
Colombia está en el momento más alto de violación de derechos humanos.
Colombia at this time is in the most highest moment of human rights violations.
Y la prueba es que aquí hay dos personas que no pueden vivir en el país.
And the proof is that right now here in the studio there are two people who can no longer live in their country.
¿Por qué insiste en que la ayuda debe ser militar, debe ser de guerra? ¿Por qué no insiste mejor en la protección por los derechos humanos, en ayudar a proteger los derechos humanos y por la erradicación y la sustitución de cultivos de manera diferente.
Why are they insisting on military aid? Why aren't they providing aid to protect human rights and to make substitute crops?
El Plan Colombia va a ser la bomba atómica moderna en Colombia y va a destrozar lo que hay de proceso de paz.
The Colombia plan will be like having the atom bomb in Colombia. It will destroy the peace process.
No nos oponemos a la lucha contra el narcotráfico.
We are not against fighting drug trafficking.
Entendemos la poca gobernabilidad que hay en el país.
We understand that there is a governance problem in the country.
Pero primero que todo exigimos respeto hacia nuestra cultura.
But first of all, we demand respect for our country,
Y en segundo lugar, creemos que de esa manera no se va a ganar la guerra contra el narcotráfico y todo lo contrario, están fortaleciendo el paramilitarismo.
And we don't think that this will stop narcotraffic. This way will only strengthen the paramilitary.
We have come to the end of our program, and I know that tomorrow the Senate is expected to take up this bill. Carlos Salinas of Amnesty International, what are human rights groups in this country doing about that?
Well, there's a call-in day tomorrow to target both House and Senate, but given the fact that maybe coming up in the Senate to put in a lot of pressure on senators to reject the aid to the military, to reject the deepening conflict in Colombia, to reject getting the United States government involved in this 40-year conflict.
Bob Weiner, what are you doing to get it passed in 10 seconds?
Amy, that state senator's statement sounded like a lot of propaganda. There's $250 million of crop substitution. There is human rights training. Bolivia and Peru, both with $1 billion over the last 8 years, stopped drugs by 66% and 55%. This is a workable plan with a time definite. It is not Vietnam. We're stopping drugs from coming to our kids.
We just have 10 seconds. Your response, Pia Thad Córdoba, 10 seconds. He said it's a lot of propaganda, what you just put out.
Tal vez usted no conoce el país, tal vez usted no sabe que en Colombia hay una violación absoluta de derechos humanos, y le exijo respeto hacia lo que nosotros consideramos que es importante.
Perhaps you don't know our country, perhaps you don't know that there is a grave violation of human rights taking place in Colombia. We demand respect.
That does it for the show. Ignacio Gomez, Pia Thad Córdoba, Carlos Salinas, and Bob Weiner, thanks for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to Democracy Now!